KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Stockton, California.
Soma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Coming up, we'll hear about why people are calling to abolish ICE and what that means.
At this point, I believe there needs to be a new system.
Then poet Josiah Luis Alderete explains why he thinks Spanglish is a true American language.
I shouldn't say it is the American language because there are many American languages, but for me, I think it really represents the America that I see.
And from our series, The Spiritual Edge, we meet a man who says he doesn't believe in religion, but finds God while in prison.
Entonces, escondí la Biblia.
On the day of his release, he hid the slim paperback in his undergarments and walked out of jail.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. In the past few weeks, the Bay Area has had one protest after another over the country's immigration policies. Thousands of people have taken to the streets.
We know that by living on stolen indigenous land, this is not the first time children have been kidnapped and taken away from their parents. While we like to believe this is un-American, this is actually embedded in our colonial settler history.
People camped outside of ICE offices in San Francisco for a week. Protesters showed up day after day to stand outside of the West County Detention Center, and many of them had the same message. Abolish ICE. The idea has been gaining traction with everyone from immigration advocates to national politicians. But what would abolishing ICE even look like? And what does that mean for the Bay Area? KALW's immigration reporter Nina Gensler-Debs is here with me to help us sort through what this all means. Hey, Nina.
Hi, Hannah.
So tell me about the story of ICE. When did ICE come into being?
Sure. So ICE, or U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, was first established in 2003 as part of a government response to the September 11th attacks.
Uh-huh.
Before that, immigration enforcement was handled by something called Immigration and Naturalization Services, or INS, under the Department of Justice.
Right.
So when ICE was formed, it was moved under the Department of Homeland Security, which was also newly created after 9/11. Confusing, I know. But it's important because one argument out there for abolishing ICE is that it actually hasn't been around that long mm-hmm. in the scope of U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration advocates have been arguing for a long time for immigration reform. But this particular slogan, abolish ICE, has really been made popular on Twitter recently, and it's picked up a lot of steam.
So who is supporting this idea to abolish ICE?
It's definitely not the majority of people out there, but a recent poll from Politico and Morning Consult show that over 40% of Democrats support abolishing ICE.
That's a big number.
Yeah. And those are more progressive liberals, right?
Uh-huh.
Those are people like Elizabeth Warren or the newly elected Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in
mm-hmm.
New York and our own Mayor Libby Schaaf in Oakland. She actually, in fact, along with about 150 other elected officials, signed a letter supporting legislation to abolish ICE. I had a phone call with her yesterday, and she told me she signed the letter because it's the right thing to do.
It's an important position to take. We have to push this conversation about how we treat our fellow man. This agency was created just roughly 15 years ago. It has not been in existence that long. It was born out of a moment of intense grief and anger and fear.
So she signed a letter, and what did she ask for exactly?
So the letter was written in support of a bill that wants to abolish ICE.
Uh-huh.
But then Republicans countered with their own bill, which is a resolution that's in support of ICE.
Uh-huh.
And actually, the House voted on that resolution, this one in support of ICE, today. And it passed. Most of the Democrats, they just abstained, right? They voted present. That doesn't mean yes or no. They abstained. But they had a chance to vote no on this bill and to make a statement against ICE, and they didn't.
Mm.
And I think this speaks to two issues.
Mm-hmm.
First, immigration is expected to be a big focus in upcoming elections. And Democrats know that abolishing ICE is not the majority opinion.
Right.
And second, moderate and more progressive liberals disagree on what to do about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Kamala Harris, for example, said on MSNBC that Congress needs to reexamine the agency, but that, quote, ICE has a role. ICE should exist, which is a more moderate opinion.
Right.
But Mayor Schaaf, she seemed pretty clear on her stance.
At this point, I believe there needs to be a new system. I won't dismiss arguments that the system could be reformed. I do believe that we know we can function without this agency.
There is widespread agreement that what we have now is not working. Mayor Schaaf told me it's not only how immigration laws are enforced, it's the laws that are the problem.
So abolishing ICE in a vacuum does not accomplish what I want accomplished. I want an immigration system that presumes people are here seeking political asylum. I also believe it's time we talk about universal representation. Residents that come to this country seeking legal entrance deserve representation as well.
So we know Schaaf has already come out against ICE in the past,
yes.
But ICE is a federal agency. So what can we really do here locally in the Bay Area? We can't just abolish ICE locally, right?
No, we can't abolish ICE locally. But local activists have been protesting for weeks outside the West County detention facility where immigrants detained by ICE are held. There are about 200 of them. And last week, the facility said they're ending their contract with ICE, and that ends in about 120 days. But these detainees, they're not just going to get released. The concern now is that they're going to move to other centers around the country, centers that are far away from their family and their support
networks.
They'll
just be shipped away.
Exactly. So that's the kind of problems that people are looking to try and solve as we move forward.
So what if they get their dream and want to abolish ICE across the country? What would it mean then? What does that look like?
Well, I asked Mayor Schaaf about that, and she told me, unsurprisingly, I'm not an expert on federal issues. I'm focused on what the impacts are in my community, that immigrants here feel safe and feel welcome. And I talked to local immigration rights groups who either didn't want to make a stance on abolishing ICE yet or were for it but didn't have a clear vision of what the world without ICE might look like.
Right.
There are organizations out there that do, though. Organizations like Latinx and Chicanx organizing group Mi Gente that say, yeah, abolish ICE, but also let's go even further. They put out a policy platform saying, let's repeal laws that criminalize immigration and don't stop with ICE. Let's disband the Border Patrol. So the movement to disband or drastically change ICE, it's likely that California, specifically the Bay Area, is going to help lead the way. Because we've been ahead of the curve with things like our sanctuary city policy.
Right.
And the fact that we have public defenders that represent undocumented people in courts. And the list goes on.
All right. Well, we will see. Thank you, Nina.
Thanks, Sana.
Nina Gensler-Debs is our immigration reporter. You can reach her at immigration@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Poet Josiah Luis Alderete will tell you he's a full-blooded Pocho Indio who refries his beans and poesia in Spanglish. He was a founding member of the Molotov Mouths Outspoken Word Troupe, a collective of politically engaged Bay Area writers active in the early 2000s. Since then, he's performed his work all over the region and was recently featured in the poetry anthology The City Is Already Speaking. Josiah came to KALW Studios to share a few poems and talk about where his work comes from.
So this poem was actually inspired by a real life person. The Don Miguel, to me, was the greatest dishwasher in all of Aslan. So I saw him for years working in the back in the kitchen and wrote a poem for him. And this poem is the Ballad of Don Miguel. Don Miguel knows what's going on. From that kitchen sink to Michoacan, Don Miguel, he knows what's going on. And Don Miguel, he can't speak the language, so he calls everything by an older name. If he has to, he can mumble in bilingual and laughs every day without bothering anybody. But you know, every day that he's worked here, even though they pretend not to, you know they see him, you know they hear him, even if he doesn't talk, and you know that they've yet to pay him what he's really worth. Don Miguel's got tiny eyeballs stuffed with miles and miles, a slick back jet black hairstyle, and a smooth profile, taken right off a bullfighting velvet painting. That viejito's got a brown forehead full of sayings that'll probably take me years to really figure out. And even if the devil were burning his feet, he'd still stop, hop from one foot to the other, and say buenos dias to you. Because Don Miguel, he knows what's going on. From that kitchen sink to Michoacán, Don Miguel knows what's going on. Well, the first memory I have of really hearing poetry, because, you know, when you're in school, you read about it and it's presented to you. But my earliest and most moving memory of hearing poetry was a friend of mine and myself found a place called Cafe Babar in the Mission that held poetry readings every Thursday night. We showed up there and it was like going to church and finding religion. I mean, these amazing poets were getting up on the stage and they weren't just reading these words on the page. They were reciting them and they were amazing. So I just received this in schooling there. That was my earliest memory of really being moved by poetry and hearing it and leaving Cafe Babar so excited and floored. That was a really interesting time because it was the beginning of the slam poetry, and then there was also the deep legacy of poetry that existed in San Francisco prior to the slam poetry, you know, because there's like the legacy of the Beats and then the Mission poets. So basically there was that to kind of get inspired from, and then the formulation of the slam poetry scene, which began. And the thing that's wonderful about the slam poetry scene is that that was something that really spoke to the people of color in the communities. That was a place where the poetry emulated the culturas, you know, and you talked about your ancestors and your familia. It was a very, very like, almost like constant themes through a lot of the early slam poetry, you know, that sort of affirmation of culture and taking back history. So this poem here is very recent, and it was inspired by a young sister from Guatemala. Her name was Claudia Patricia Gomez Gonzalez, and after traveling, I think it was something like 1,500 miles to get here from Guatemala, she was shot in the head in the town of Rio Bravo, Texas, by a Border Patrol agent. Obviously, the death of any young person of our cultura is a painful thing, but this particular death has very much resonated with a lot of people, so... and as a lot of us have felt it. So this is a poem to her. It doesn't have a title. It's dedicated to Claudia. Claudia Patricia Gomez Gonzalez. As I watch the Facebook video of you lying on the ground, I'm wondering if you ever imagined that by simply trying to make your life better, you would be shot in the head. Princesita, as your familia called you, did you know cuando you took those first steps leaving Guatemala that there was a shrine in Tijuana to Juan Soldado with a candela for you burning on it already? And did you ever imagine that if you did manage to make it here to North America, it would be considered a genuine milagro as much as bleeding, healing palmas, or imágenes of Tonatzin appearing on garage doors in Los Angeles suburbs? Claudia Patricia Gomez Gonzalez, as you walked, did it ever occur to you that by simply dreaming of a better life, that would be considered an act of aggression over here? Princesita, did you ever imagine that when you arrived, your entire cultura would be considered a POW? I do feel a huge responsibility to be a truth teller. That's tied so much to Chicano literature, is telling, because we don't get the truth here in the United States about our cultures, you know, be it brown, black, Asian, you know, whoever. We have to look for that truth. So, and a lot of times, particularly with the Chicano literature, and you could trace it all the way back to the early times when Cesar Chavez marched and the Teatro Campesino would perform for them, you know, these historical pieces and things like that, all the way through. It's like our literature always teaches us. It teaches us our history. It teaches us our roots, our familia, our cultura. So I feel a huge responsibility in my poesía and in my writing to represent my culture and that history, and to tell it. It's very important to tell it.
Claudia, Patricia, Gomez, Gonzalez, did you know that when you got here, you would be considered illiterate for having the knowledge of multiple cultures? On the nights when you rested outside, did you look up at las estrellas and know that the government of estos estados jodidos had disappeared over 1,500 other niños y niñas who looked just like you already? Did you know that when you got here, that just by speaking Maya, that would be considered an act of hostility? Claudia, Patricia, Gomez, Gonzalez, did you ever imagine that when you got here, some people would look at you with a hatred that would be considered patriotic? Did you imagine the corrugated, rusty walls of the border? Did you imagine the dusty streets of Rio Bravo? Did you imagine your padre waiting for you somewhere on este lado with flores for you? Claudia, Patricia, Gomez, Gonzalez, as you continued walking here, did you know that aquí en Aslan, the mariposas carry around the souls of the dead? Did you ever dream that you would be a mariposa on this side of the border? When you saw his face, did you know he was your death, or was he unrecognizable underneath the cap? We will never know. But I think that a part of you knew these things very well. You knew these things were waiting for you, along with so many other possibilities. You knew it very well, Princesita. As you walked, guerrera brave, towards Tejas and towards that bullet, Claudia, Patricia, Gomez, Gonzalez.
That was poet and KLW Audio Academy graduate Josiah Luis Alderete. The piece was produced by Jen Chien. Josiah, along with M.K. Chavez, is kicking off a new monthly reading series called Speaking Axolotl tomorrow night at the Nomadic Press Studios in Oakland's Uptown District. That's at 23rd and Telegraph. For more information, go to our website, klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Our ongoing series, The Spiritual Edge, occasionally spotlights stories about how people have come to their own personal religious beliefs. Today's story profiles an Uber driver named Oscar from Napa. He didn't grow up particularly religious, but during a months-long incarceration, he found the Bible that would change his life.
Bueno, yo me llamo Oscar.
This is Oscar. He's an Uber driver in Napa, 44 years old. We're not using his last name because of the personal nature of this story.
Y mi religión. No creo mucho en la religión.
He says his religion, well, he doesn't believe much in religion.
Creo en la relación con Dios.
Instead, he says, I believe in my relationship with God. or Dios in Spanish. That's what's most important, he says. From it has evolved the hierarchy of his life. It goes like this.
En mi vida es Dios primero.
God first.
Mi familia.
Next is family.
La iglesia.
Church.
Y el trabajo.
And finally, work. Oscar didn't always think like this. 15 years ago, he was a drug addict. It drove his wife Alma to near desperation.
Sí, yo pensaba dejarlo.
She says, yes, I was thinking of leaving him.
Porque ya no podía más con la situación. Yo decía, no, eso ya no puede seguir.
She says she couldn't handle the situation anymore. I couldn't continue, she says. There in their house, she was a witness to his self-destruction. Oscar would stay up all night in the garage smoking crack. They hardly spent time together. She felt lonely. Then in 2004, her husband was arrested. But in a Santa Clara jail, Oscar found redemption.
Okay, bueno, en mis manos tengo el Nuevo Testamento.
In my hands, I have the New Testament, he tells me. He shows me a thin, well-used book he's fetched from his bedroom. It's a Spanish translation of what's called the New International Version.
Sí, bueno, como puedes ver, ya está un poco rompido.
You can see that it's a little broken, a little mistreated, he says. He points to its rumpled, pale pink cover and torn pages. It's seen better days, but Oscar treasures this book. He read it for the first time in jail. At that point, religion wasn't all that important to him. Oscar grew up Catholic in Zacatecas, Mexico. Both in Mexico and after immigrating to the U.S., he'd only go with his family to Mass for special occasions.
Cuando me casé.
When he got married.
Cuando me bautizaron.
When he was baptized.
Cuando hice la primera comunión.
And for First Communion. At most, a few times a year. God and the church just didn't figure all that prominently in his life. Oscar says his drug habit started when he was 20 years old, on the day of his son's birth. His son was born in the wee hours of the morning. Afterwards, he couldn't sleep. A cousin told him a little cocaine would help.
Y allí inició mi carrera de usar drogas.
And there began my drug-using career, he says.
Poco a poco fue aumentando la porción de droga.
Little by little, the drug addiction grew. It followed him to the United States. Finally, he was charged with robbery and sent to jail for what he says was about 6 months. And that's when he checked out the Bible from the prison library. He began reading it, and something clicked. Inside, he began to shift.
Cuando tú empiezas a ponerle un poquito más de atención a las palabras de Jesucristo,
Oscar says, when you begin to pay more attention to the words of Jesus Christ,
empieza a llegar luz a tu mente.
It's like a light begins to shine in your mind, he says. It's like you begin to change, but don't know that you're changing.
Si tú siembras honestidad,
if you plant honesty,
amor,
love,
integridad,
integrity,
compasión,
compassion,
eso vas a cosechar.
This is what will grow, he began to understand from the paperback New Testament edition.
Eso impactó mi vida.
It impacted his life, he says. When he returned home, he was different.
Antes se metía en un cuarto, no me hacía mucho caso, no estaba mucho con nosotros, él se salía, él viajaba.
Before his stint in jail, Oscar's wife Alma says he didn't pay much attention to her or their family. He'd go out a lot.
Y después ya no, fue cambiando, ya.
But afterwards, no, he changed. He ate meals together with the family, and most importantly, he had committed his last crime. Ironically, it was with the New Testament. That is, the copy he discovered during his incarceration.
Entonces, escondí la Biblia en abajo de mi ropa interior.
On the day of his release, he hid the slim paperback in his undergarments and walked out of jail.
Dios les bendiga, hermanos.
Amen.
Dios les bendiga.
Amen.
Today, Oscar is active in a Pentecostal church. For him, the church is a reminder for how far he's come, and also of God's presence in his life. Still, he says, it was his relationship with God that led him to the church, not the other way around. That relationship with God is personal. It's what guides him. He says, it's the most important thing. In Napa, I'm Judy Silbert for Cross Currents.
Yes.
That story comes to us from The Spiritual Edge, a series exploring the intersection of innovation and belief from reporter and producer Judy Silber. And the rest of our team today includes Zoe Ferrigno, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Emma McAvoy, True Quinn, Marissa Shea, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Shireen Adil is our content manager. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Cruel Diagonals from Oakland. You can catch them and other experimental acts tomorrow night at the Luggage Store in San Francisco. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.